because I'm just going to go ahead and hit question mark. And I'm going to say, find me the top 10 most positive customer responses to the Ask AI launch. Make sure each one is at least 2 sentences. Think about the craziness at this point. It's going through millions of emails I've received over the last year. It's synthesizing information. This is true needle in a haystack combination information synthesis stuff. All I now have to do is hit copy, come here, hit paste.
Get rid of the formatting's perfect.
It is done. Wow. It is done.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by NetSuite, the number one cloud financial system that unifies accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into a single platform, giving you one source of truth. Download the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning today. Visit netsuite.com/twist. Lemon.io. Hire pre-vetted remote developers. Get 15% off your first 4 weeks of developer time at lemon.io/twist. And Assembly AI. Get maximum value from voice data with Assembly AI. Build powerful products and features for your end users on the industry's leading speech-to-text models. Get 100 free hours to start building at assemblyai.com/twist.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in Startups. One of the great joys of my life, having been an angel investor and now a seed investor, is that I get to meet entrepreneurs at the start of their careers. And one of the great entrepreneurs I've been lucky enough to work with over 2 startups is Raul Vora. He started a company called Reportive, and I was a fan of this little toolbar that helped people using their Gmail figure out who's emailing them by clicking on a link and seeing their Twitter and their LinkedIn profiles. Easy peasy lemon squeezy was the simplest, most elegant piece of software I had used at the time, but man, was it a time saver, and it grew like a wildfire. It was sold to LinkedIn. And I told my pal, Raul, I'm absolutely in favor of you selling this. I think he wanted to keep going. His founders didn't. A lot of stories there. I said, just promise me when you leave LinkedIn, I get to be the first investor in your next startup. And I think I'm one of the first. It's a little controversial because there's another super fan of Raul's who also likes to be considered the first. And he's a friend of mine, Dharmesh from HubSpot. Welcome back to This Week in Startups, Raul Vora. From Superhuman. How are you doing, pal?
Doing great. Excited to be back. I think this is my third time.
Third time on the show. When you hit 5, we give you a jacket. And but people don't know that you've also done at least, 5 or 10 times for me, talks with our founders. I mean, we're also very thankful for that. The reason I wanted to have on the pod is, I'm a super fan of Superhuman, which is an email product that you pitched to me on a Sunday at my house over bagels. And I always recount the story to people when I talk about Uber and Robinhood and Calm amongst, the greatest hits we've had. And I think Superhuman will be right there with it in terms of returns for RLPs, but also in terms of just greatness of a product. Your pitch made no sense. And when a pitch makes no sense, that's when I get excited. When I'm confused after having invested in 400 companies and taken 10,000 meetings with founders, I know there's something there. Do you remember the original pitch on that Sunday?
I probably said something along the lines of, Jason, I'm going to build the fastest email experience in the world, and then we're going to charge people $30 a month for it. And you probably did a spit take with your bagel and were like, Rahul, that's not going to work. No one's going to pay for this thing that historically has been free. And I probably said something brash along the lines of, Jason, trust me, they will.
Yeah. And it was exactly like that. And the heat check I gave you was, okay, so you want to take on Gmail, which is free, and you want to make it faster than the company who makes Gmail, Google, which has an obsession with speed and the largest, at that time, computer network in the world and the largest number of engineers focused on speed in the world, and you think you can beat them. You were like, yeah. And then you explained to me why. And it was a really good explanation, which is Gmail is servicing billions of users. They need to build it to the average user. And because it's free, like, they're not going to, hemorrhage money making it faster. And that you only needed to get 1% of email users who care about, and this is where ideal customer profile comes in, you know, for anybody, like Dharmesh from HubSpot, who I think just recently tweeted a, you know, a great testimonial of Superhuman. Anybody who's in their email box for more than an hour to a day, which would be a power user, which is probably the top 10% of users, and whose time is worth more, worth a lot of money on a per hour basis, would pay any amount of money to get through that goddamn inbox faster. That was the key insight. And that's why a dollar a day is farcical to a CEO, a management team, and anybody making over $100,000 a year. A dollar a day is nothing if they can gain back but 10 minutes per day. And that's when I fell in love with your concept. When you deployed that concept into the real world, and you had this concept about the ideal customer profile, and we'll talk about Superhuman 2.0 and all these new features powered by AI, but I just want to go back in history. When you brought it to market, what did you learn? And how did your vision manifest itself when it faced the reality of users?
Yeah, gosh, well, that's kind of quite an evolution. I think like most founders, I started with a gut sense that something was wrong with Gmail. And I lived it myself. I mean, you mentioned Reportive at the top of the show. I was a CEO back then before I was selling the company to LinkedIn. And I remember managing my email with Reportive, but also with Boomerang, with other similar browser extensions that we had at the time. And bizarrely, Gmail was just getting worse every single year. It was becoming slower, more cluttered. It still wasn't working properly offline. It turns out that at the time, this is probably still the case, that Gmail inside of Chrome was the single biggest reason your laptop would run out of battery. It's so energy inefficient. And on top of this, people were installing plugins. And I thought, how ridiculous, but also in a weird way, how fortuitous, we'd created the perfect conditions to go and build an even bigger company. That's because Reportive was the first Gmail extension to scale to millions of users. Before then, it was insane. I mean, nowadays we take it for granted. Grammarly and Honey, two major browser extension success stories. But back then, this is 2010, no one believed you could build a business with a browser extension. So we showed people that you could, and there were lots of products, and the whole ecosystem was falling apart. So I thought to myself, okay, there has to be a better way. What would email look like if it was, in a sense, vertically integrated, like if Apple were to build it, if you didn't have to add a bunch of browser extensions, if it was blazingly fast, searches were instantaneous, everything happened immediately, and if all of that just worked offline. So that was the original idea for Superhuman, and it was really a gut sense that I had. But then I did something that I think too few founders do, which I know you'll appreciate. In that first year, I spoke to about 700 people. That's roughly two per day. And you might think, well, that's kind of a lot. How did you do that efficiently? Actually, very easily. I put up superhuman.com. It sucked, like a bit of blur, really not great design, whatever, just stating the vision. And whenever anybody emailed in, they got an automated response back from me. Now, it didn't look automatic, but it went something along the lines of, thank you for signing up. We're busy building the best email experience we can possibly imagine. Two questions. What do you use for email today? And what do you hate about it? Two very powerful questions. I think you can use this for any product, any service, any market. And invariably, people would get back and say, I use Gmail. Some of them were using third-party products. But they would all say, email takes too long. And when I would dig in, they'd be like, it takes too long. It's too slow. I'm frustrated. I don't like how long I spend in it. So there was like this mix of ideas here. At the same time, I read this amazing book. I think it's called Positioning the Battle for Your Mind. And I realized that because this is a market dominated by incumbents, I needed to find a positioning that everyone would remember. It might be weird. It might be kooky, but speed is something that everybody can remember. And that was the first time where I was like, okay, there might be something here. And then finally, I knew we had it when I did the cocktail party test. You may have heard of this. Ed Sim, a dear friend of ours at Boltstart, shared the name with me. But the idea is go to a cocktail party, kind of lurk, watch people pitching your product to other people and see what they say. And time after time again, I'd hear people, founders and managers, but also salespeople and folks in BD and whatnot, say, Superhuman, it's really fucking fast. And at that point, I knew I had it. It had become like this viral idea. It was so easy to remember, so hard to dislodge, so easy to own because no other product was owning that space, that we just ran straight after it.
Okay. Are you worried that your startup is the only company out there that's not building with AI features? Well, if your company records or collects any voice data, I've got a secret weapon for you. Assembly AI has the AI models you need to turn that data into new features that your users are going to love. So don't fall behind. Put this incredible technology to work for you. Whether it's podcasting, audiobooks, meetings, especially the virtual ones, and all the videos that people are constantly uploading, we're producing and consuming more voice data than ever before. If your startup is building a product that uses voice data, you need to check out Assembly AI. Assembly AI builds speech-to-text AI models that can turn your voice data into new product capabilities. All you need is voice data and a few lines of code. For example, Veed.io makes video editing tools that generate captions. That's what you see on all the This Week in Startups clips. That wouldn't be possible without Assembly AI crunching the audio data. Assembly AI's speech-to-text models are simple, accurate, and fast, and they've got the industry's lowest word error rate, 30% fewer hallucinations. If you want to put your audio data to work and build powerful AI experiences for your customers, head to assemblyai.com/twist and get 100 hours for free and join over 200,000 developers who are building amazing apps with voice data. Go to assemblyai.com/twist today.
It is amazing how this focus on a certain set of users, not all users, but a certain set of users can unlock features that maybe the masses just don't care about and are unwilling to pay for, but that a certain group of people covet. And so, you know, when you get the product out there, it's gorgeous. I think two things, you know, led me to believe that this would be a fantastic investment. And in fact, the fund you're in, I think we invested $500,000, the biggest bet we had made to date in that fund. This was a $10 million fund, and you have your own fund, and you understand, like, when you have a $10 million fund, like, 5% of the fund going into one startup is a big bet. And, you know, I just, two things occurred to me, you know, watching your story over the years. One, people have copied your design and your concept. So I have been pitched no less than 50 times on where superhuman for calendar, superhuman for CRM, superhuman for Slack, whatever it is. And it's actually what they mean by that when you say superhuman for, in a human's mind, what that means is, or in our industry, it's going to be elegant, powerful, and for power users. It's actually like an aesthetic now, which I think is like a very big compliment. Now, that alone doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but it does mean something that the founding community is so enamored by what you built. The second piece that I thought was very interesting is when I talk to founders, and again, we have 20,000 people apply for funding from Launch Now, and we do 100 per year. So since we invested in you 10 years ago or so, I don't know, maybe 9 years ago, I think it was like, 2015 or something.
2015, yeah.
Yeah. You know, since then, many folks have come to us and said, I say, okay, yeah, you know, what's your go-to market strategy? And they say, oh, we're going to superhuman it. And we're just going to do what superhuman does. We're going to do what Raul does, his playbook. And what they mean by that is we're only going to onboard people with a 30-minute interview. So let's pause there and talk about that innovation. How did you come up with that? And then how have you altered, evolved, or not that strategy? And founders who are listening, this is a super profound one.
Right. So this was way back when. I believe we started onboarding people in probably the end of 2017, maybe the end of 2018, more likely 17. In fact, I think the very first paying customer might be our good friend of both of ours, Austin Peter Smith.
He was, and, yes. Austin Smith, now Peter Smith, was your first interview, correct?
Yeah, yeah. So why did we do it in person? Okay. There is this rule of thumb, and I read this first in a really great book, Traction, by Gabriel Weinberg, Justin Mez, where they say that as a startup, you should aim to spend roughly 50% of your resources on product, but 50% of your resources on growth. And I think in general, that's pretty good advice, because most founders forget the latter, and they just obsess about product all day long. However, the size of the problem that we were taking on was too large to do that. today, it's relatively easy for us to hire excellent engineers. We have a phenomenal team. But back then, in the sort of 2014 to 2017 era, I mean, Jason, it was tough. People were like, wait, you're building what? Okay, you have all these great investors, but you're building what? That kind of doesn't make sense. You know, there was some skepticism, as one might expect. So it was difficult to build a large engineering team. And in any case, we didn't want to spend too much money. I therefore always had to choose for each marginal engineering hour, do I put that into making the product better and into unlocking products market fit more, or do I put that into things like activation and building a first-time user experience? And I just remember thinking to myself, well, what if the product is wrong? What if we have to change something? Every engineering hour we spend on growth, we're not spending on product, and boy, do we have a lot of product to build. Now, of course, this was a pretty zerpy era, so it was relatively easy to raise dollars, but it was hard to get engineering hours. What does a good entrepreneur do? They spot an arbitrage. And I was like, okay, I'm going to raise dollars, I'm going to hire an onboarding team, and I'm going to put the meager engineering hours I have into improving the product. What we're going to do is we're going to substitute the software onboarding with a human onboarding. So that's where the idea initially came out of. Now, when we started doing it, of course, we look at the metrics. We are not data-driven, but we're data-informed. And we were looking at things like bug rate and virality and net promoter score and the product market fit score, which I've spoken about a lot. And all of those were through the roof. And initially, I was like, okay, is it just because I'm doing the onboarding? Or is it because my brother, then head of growth, Gaurav, is doing the onboarding? Or is it because the onboarders are super charismatic? And we started disproving these negative theories one by one until we were just like, wow, the onboarding really does work. Now, the other aspect of why founders might want to consider this, perhaps the most important aspect, is you get rid of the tire kickers. Especially if your product is something like Superhuman, where, you know, it's designed to make you more productive, it's designed to save you time, there's a very real ROI. Most of our customers save 4 hours or more every single week. They're applying to emails 12 hours sooner. They're getting through their inbox twice as fast. What you don't want are people who don't value that thing. And it's very, very easy with email to just get like tens of thousands of people signing up.
Because everybody has an email address. The pool of potential customers is everybody, but the ideal customer profile is somebody who is going to learn the product, who knows quick keys, and who's going to leverage it. And if you're a casual email user, you know, my mom uses email. She, you know, gets a couple a day. She's not taking the time, in all likelihood, to learn the quick keys. Once you're getting 100 emails a day, you're learning the quick keys. You want to get through stuff fast. And this was, I think, you know, a very big unlock for me in evaluating products as an investor, which is like, who is this for exactly? And does the founder understand who their actual customer is? And I think this was just such a great unlock for you in terms of your career trajectory. Again, you know, we are so lucky to have invested in some great founders across two companies. I was the first investor in Thumbtack, and I'm the first investor in Athena. Like, wow. First investor in LinkedIn. I'm sorry, Reportive. First, well, I'm going to say I'm first, but I know Dharmesh is going to get upset. But, you know, amongst the first, in the first group that got into Superhuman. And what the founder learns across companies is so critical. Reportive was, you know, ostensibly for everybody, but the people who actually got value from it were salespeople or executives or hiring people. Like those two or three people who are going to look up the LinkedIn, look up the Twitter handle of 100% of people who email them, right? Like that's not everybody, am I correct?
I'll share something that's going to blow your mind. And we should have sold this company for a lot more. It's been so long, I don't think anyone will care. It turns out—
Which is what I told you. I was so heartbroken. I tell everybody, when you made me five times my money, it was the worst day of my life.
Well, like, okay. It was a precarious situation, as the classic example of, you know, leaning on one API, which could go away at any point in time. We had 10% of LinkedIn's daily active users on Reportive. Imagine that. Multi-billion dollar company that had just gone public. We had 10% of their daily active users, and I had no idea.
It's crazy. Here's the thing. People tell me also, like, I sold Weblogs Inc., which we sold for $30 million 18, 20 months after we started. Oh my God, you're an idiot. You sold it too early. people don't remember, the industry was very different at that time, almost 20 years ago when we sold, which was, you know, there was no such thing as secondary. I was negative $20,000 mm-hmm. when Brian, Alvy, and I sold, and Ryan and Peter from Engadget, like when we sold that company. Like, I was broke. There was no secondary opportunity. When you sold, you know, this idea that, like, there's a sword that's going to come down on your head and just kill the business because an API is going to go bing. Right. And then it's not like you had a war chest like you do now and the reputation. So, and you had co-founders, you know, people want to get off the train, you know, so many different things. But that's such a great, it's such a great fire. It's such a great regret to put in a founder's head. Because then when you do the next one, you're like, you know what? This time we're going for gold. We're not taking the bronze. We're not taking silver. We're gonna go for the gold. Now, if we happen to go for the gold and hit silver or bronze, it's not the end of the world. But, you know, and back in that day, you know, sometimes somebody offers you a bronze medal, a silver medal, and you're like, no, I got to take it for my family, et cetera. Let's talk about Superhuman 2.0. You've been at this for a long time. People don't know the numbers. I do. But, you know, let's just say this is a significant business now. It's, you know, it's got real revenue, real customer base. And there were a couple things I kept hounding you on. And you are methodical. I'm not going to say slow, but methodical in releasing products. So you really try to get it right the first time. I very much appreciate that. But I was just like, I need multiplayer mode. I need team snippets. I'm like, gosh almighty. You know, I got these, you know, people on my team. I'm writing snippets for people who don't know. I have to send the same email over and over and over again, which is, thanks for emailing me. We don't take pitches for the podcast. Thanks for emailing me. I wish you great success in your startup. However, we don't invest in your category. We wish you tremendous success. Here's some resources for you. And then I need to give those snippets, and I want crystal clear communication from our organization as it grew to 21 people that they use the same language because, you know, you don't want to say things. You want to say things consistently. So I really need to group snippets. And then I was like, you know, I'm taking screenshots of Superhuman, putting it into Slack and having conversations around threads. And then some person on my team responds. I literally just had this happen. Somebody responded and said, hey, you know, I think this founder has ugly baby syndrome.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, this happened to me this month, Raul. And I was
to
like,
the founder?
Left the founder on the CC list. And, you know, I really like this founder ugly, they were referring to ugly. And I was like, this is literally a researcher in their first year. And by ugly baby, he meant his product. Right. And
I get it. Still.
I had asked like one question or two questions that were, you know, a little challenging on the call. Hey, how do you think about this? How do you think about the design? You know, and then this researcher worked for me in year one and I'm like, do I have to fire this guy or not? And he was so smart, my researcher. He called the founder on the phone. He said, I'm probably going to get fired for sending an email. I just want to let you know, I'm incredibly sorry. That was a terrible way to phrase it. I know that it's year one for your startup. I respect you. And I know that design was maybe something you're working on. So he smoothed it over with the founder. And then it got to me. And he's like, just so you know, I called the founder. But this could have easily been avoided had this person been on Superhuman who had not yet installed it or not yet used it. And that might have been on my team's fault. With the new features. So can we go over those multiplayer mode features and then the AI features and just talk about how you think about launching new features?
Absolutely. And okay. I'll do the craziest of things and I'll attempt a live demo. Let's hope OpenAI Fireworks, et cetera, don't go down. So we, you know, it's funny. I was actually just looking at the notes. For the first time I was on the pod, this was October 23, 2018. It's kind of insane. And you asked me, what does the future of email look like? And I said three things. Well, I said a lot of things, but including, you'll see a lot more AI and machine learning. You'll see your emails automatically written for you. I'm reading this out now. Number two, you'll see a lot more tooling around collaboration, multiplayer shared conversations, assignment, shared draft, and so on. And number three, you'll see emails themselves get shorter and shorter. Email clients will themselves turn into messaging apps. That was 2018. And so I had a very happy moment this morning when I was preparing for this call where I was like, oh, wow, that was true. It took a while, but like that's actually what's happening right now, which is kind of cool.
Okay. Okay, so, well, I mean, it is. Did you run it through? Did you run that episode through an AI to get the summary, or did you just listen to it?
No. As you know, I fastidiously prepare for everything. So I was just looking at the notes from how many years ago.
Really interesting. You know, Claude does a really nice job with summarizing, I think, YouTube videos or videos. So I've gotten my. You should start thinking about the power of AI.
Mm.
One of the great powers of AI, if you look at podcast production. We have a new company we invested in, Podcast AI, and the founder, Edward, reminds me a lot of you because he's customer obsessed. He figured out a way to not only like do transcripts, which is kind of table stakes now, but it understands the context of the conversation and then writes show notes for us of like all the moments in the show. And then you can highlight it and make a clip and make an audio or video clip, putting that all aside. He then was like, you know what would be good for us to know what's happening in the news and then write a docket. Which is, you know, what I call our, you know, our prepared document for what we're going to talk about. If you could actually have it tell it what sources of news you cover, you know, if you're a biotech company, here's the 10 biotechs, and it actually suggested stories and made the docket. Wow. So essentially AI is taking what producers do in podcasting and basically starting them on second base, maybe even third base. So you just have to run home, steal home. And it just means either you can make better production or lower your cost by having less. So it's really actually happening in text, audio, and knowledge work. It's actually happening now. Right now, startups have to do more with less. We all know that. And founders have to be smart with how they deploy capital. Investors are very tuned in to being capital efficient. So if you need great tech talent, but you don't have the time to interview dozens and dozens and dozens of candidates, you need to check out Lemon.io. They have thousands of on-demand developers to choose from, and these devs are vetted, and their experience, and most of all, they're results-oriented. They're going to get you the result you're looking for. They're not going to leave you hanging. And guess what? They charge competitive rates. Great developers can be incredibly hard to find. We all know that. And when you do find them, it can be hard to integrate them into your team, but Lemon.io will handle all of that for you. Startups choose Lemon.io because they only offer handpicked developers with 3 or more years of experience and strong portfolios. In fact, only 1% of candidates who apply get in. And if something ever goes wrong, Lemon.io will get you a replacement ASAP. A couple of launch founders have worked with Lemon.io and they've had great experiences. So here's your call to action. Go to lemon.io/twist to find your perfect developer or tech team in 48 hours or less. And Twist listeners get 15% off their first 4 weeks. Stop burning money. Hire developers smarter. Visit lemon.io/twist. So yeah, let's do the live demo. I love a good demo. Let's have a back and forth discussion here. A show don't tell, always one of my favorite rules of podcasting. If you're listening right now, go to youtube.com and just search for This Week in Startups and you can find the video. Or use Spotify, which has video.
Yeah. The context here is we had a major inflection over the course of the last year. And as you know, as an investor, we are being pulled up market into the enterprise. We recently closed a very large tier one strategy consulting firm. I can't say which one. Our largest deployments have grown from small startups to teams of several thousand. And we're now serving industries that go well beyond just technology.
What's
which is
the largest number of users or ballpark users with one installation, one domain name, you know, as it were, one organization? Have you gotten past 1,000 in anybody?
Yeah, in the region of 2,000 to 3,000.
I had no idea. That's so extraordinary to be that far up. I thought you were going to be sub 1,000 for a while. That's great.
We were just until a few months ago, but over the last year, enterprises really just started clicking and we've more than doubled the rate at which we welcome these new users. Now, as we grew and as we've grown to serve these larger companies, we noticed this fundamental problem with email, the one that you just outlined, which is that basically every other piece of software that we use, think Slack, Figma, Notion, Loom, that's now all collaborative by default. And even though more people use email than any other tool, for folks who don't know, 1 billion professionals use email for 3 hours every single day, email is not yet collaborative. And the problem is so ingrained that we take it for granted. So for example, if you want to share that email with your team, you could have a meeting, but your team probably isn't free. You could paste a screenshot into Slack or Microsoft Teams, but now the conversation is in two separate places, and you could forward or BCC. But now you have to remember to do that for every single email that you send or receive. And there's always the risk that somebody does what your analyst did and says something regrettable externally. So what do we do? Well, three things. we imagined the core email experience to be multiplayer by default. Number one, you can now share a live view of any email conversation with your team. There's no need to ask for meetings. There's no need to pay screenshots. There's no need to repeatedly forward in BCC. Number two, your team can then follow along either in Superhuman or via a link. They don't even need to be using Superhuman. I'll share an example of this with you in a minute. And number three, you and your team can then comment directly on the conversation, and there's no risk that those conversations actually leak. So let's take a look. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen.
Okay, so here we are, Bravado plus Superhuman for sales, and you're having a conversation here. I see that. And I love this new feature, by the way. Under the subject line, there is a little summary in bullet points. This, I didn't know you were going to do this, but this has saved me when I have to catch up on some crazy thread. And here, in the summary, it says, Sahil and Superhuman discuss podcast details and scheduling. Sahil offers 20% discount on sponsorship. Superhuman requests further re-education, reduction. Superhuman signs and returns sponsorship paperwork. Podcast recording set for 7:23, 10 a.m. Sahil requests expedited paperwork return. And it has a thumbs up, thumbs down. These summaries are pretty accurate, huh?
Super accurate. And, and I love these. And you'll notice that I'm just going to quickly scroll up and down. This is a long ass email. Oh, there is a lot going on here.
About 20 emails back and forth.
Yeah. Imagine you suddenly got added to this and boom, that's all you need to know.
Okay. So genius.
Should point out, we love Sahil. I checked with him this morning. I have his full permission and his blessing to share this. If you haven't seen Bravado, they're an amazing community of salespeople. Go check them out. Mm. We recently launched Superhuman for Sales. Let me just show you what that is. It's a version of Superhuman that is designed for salespeople. It does all kinds of incredible things. And we needed
to
design.
Do I have to pay extra for that? Or is it just included in my dollar a month?
It is. We also just launched new pricing plans. Ooh. So if you're paying monthly, it's $40 a month. This comes with Superhuman for Sales. Yearly, it's still very similar, $33 a month.
So $400 a year. And if I save 1 hour per person per month on an average salary, you know, that would be $40 an hour times 2,000 hours a year, 80,000. So anybody making above $80,000 a year who saves 1 hour, you're break even already. And less mistakes, costly mistakes. So, you know, on a team of 20, $400 a year, you start doing the math, $8,000. No brainer for our organization, but you know, you have to do your own back of the envelope math for your organization.
Totally. Or what many of our customers do is we help you do the math, right? Like it is a very classic motion. We'll come in, we'll help you figure out the ROI calculation. Most customers are actually saving 4 hours per user per week or more. So the ROI of buying Superhuman is well north of 20x per year. Okay, back to this example. We had to come up with a go-to-market for Superhuman for Sales. I thought of Bravado as an amazing community that we could advertise to, so I pinged Sahil, and we start to get the conversation going. Now, this is just between me and Seon, or Sei, who is our head of marketing. We've got some back and forth going on here, and you can see here, he's like, okay, we have 80,000 people, which plenty of VPs, CROs, 300,000 account executives, like such a great opportunity. And he says $50,000. Okay, now it's the time where we have to have the conversation internally. What you might do historically at this point is paste it into Slack.
That's what I would
do. Now, no one else can, which has its problems, right? Like people can't see previous emails. They won't be able to see future emails. The conversation is now in two separate places. Or what many organizations do is they start repeatedly forwarding and BCC. But what we do here is Sei starts sharing the thread. This shares all the previous emails and all future emails with the people he is going to share it with. He says, is this something you'd be up for? It seems like a good idea. It's going to drive MQLs. And he adds my EA, Megan. He adds the head of product marketing for Superhuman for Sales, Spencer, and the head of product management for Superhuman for Sales, Chris, which is amazing. Because they now get to see not only all the previous emails, as opposed to one weird forwarded reverse chronological mail, but also all future emails as well. Sahil, bless his heart, then pings because you know we sort of sat on this for 2 days. We buy some more time, and now we start having an internal conversation about scheduling. It's like, okay, you know, Rahul's going to be pretty busy. He's going to be out of country. I opine, I'm like, look, this is the first time I'm talking about this. Let's get this really, really great. Mm-hmm. How are we thinking about ROI? How are we thinking about timing? Should we do one big launch or should we do two multiple launches? Spencer recommends we do it. I'm still pushing on the ROI. So Hill's like, yo, what's going on? Let's get this done. So there's like these two parallel conversations here. There's the internal conversation, there's the external one.
And you, what's really nice on a design basis, for those of you not watching, is it visually looks different. The email looks like one thread, and then the square boxes, although I'd like to see them with a little background color, maybe, like if I could, if you tinted them a little yellow or something. This is a very 1.0 product here. But even for me visually, I'm so concerned. It's like this little fear going on. Is there's two threads and never the two shall meet, because we might say something like, hey, this founder just doesn't seem driven enough, or if somebody says, hey, I don't think this founder is going to figure it out, or I don't think they can compete with, you know, superhuman or something. Oh my God, this could be disastrous. So how do you think about the design there when you were designing this?
It was exactly that. This is a different, I know not everyone can see, but the comments are a different width to the emails. They look very different. And that is to drive home the point that, unfortunately, the very honest mistake that your analyst made is not going to be made again.
Happens every day.
It's so embarrassing, and people should not be let down by our software in that way. So that was a core part behind this. And you can see here, there's a very happy ending. We get the schedule, we get the discount, or we get it done. It then turns into a classic scheduling email. We want to spare our good friend Sahil all of the nonsense with my out of office and going to Europe and back and forth, and it just gets done. And this is something that now is in the hands of our customers. We're getting feedback like, we're closing deals that we wouldn't have closed before. We're closing deals faster than we've closed them before. Everyone is way more comfortable. And here's something really cool. You don't even have to be in Superhuman. So I could click up here, or I hit Command S. This is the share conversation dialogue. I'm just going to hit copy link. And then come over to text message. Jason, this is our text message back and forth. I'm just going to text this to you. You can now tap this on your phone if you were so inclined, and you would get that whole full conversation. You'd see what are emails, you'd see what are comments. You could then input on the conversation.
Yeah.
And that would then appear here.
So if I'm not on your team, it would not do it. So if somebody got that URL and they're not part of the team space, doesn't work, right?
So it actually does. So this is designed for the use case where you maybe want to collaborate with your first investor, like yourself, or you want to collaborate with a vendor, or you want to collaborate with your PR agency, or whatever it may be. And then in the future, we're going to be building controls on turning off those links, turning on those links, and so on.
Got it. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like when you share a document in Google Docs, you can make a public link, you can make an organization link, etc. I do think, just to punch up here, investor giving unsolicited feedback, you can throw it in the garbage. Making it a different font or a slightly different background color would make this really interesting. And then the next piece I'm trying to figure out, and I'm sure you have this on the roadmap, is I want to be able to pull up all the internal conversations. So I have an inbox, but I want an internal inbox, which would be just show me all the threads that are going on in the organization, you know, outside of my inbox. Does that make sense? I don't know what to call it.
We do have something very close to that already. What you want to do is hit Command K, split inbox settings, and you can go here. The split, I've got loads, as you can see here.
Yeah,
the one that you want is team. So go ahead and turn on team. That'll be from launch.co to me, or whatever URL you're using it on.
Yep.
And it's not all the email internally, because that turns out to be way too much, but it's all the email internally addressed to you. As a leader, you want to respond to very quickly, because ultimately we're the folks who hold our organizations back when we don't reply quickly. So it's up to us to reply fast.
All right. What is the future hold for your business? If you ask 9 experts, you're going to get 10 answers. Bull market, bear market, rates are going to rise, rates are going to fall, inflation this, inflation that. Can someone please invent a crystal ball for me? Until then, over 38,000 businesses have future-proofed their operations with NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud ERP, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and human resources into one single platform, giving you one source of truth. With NetSuite, you have the visibility and control you need to make quick decisions. With real-time insights and forecasting, you're peering into the future based on all this amazing data with actionable insights based on that data. It's really simple. When you're closing the books, in days, not weeks, everything's going to get better for your company. You're going to be spending less time looking backwards and more time looking at what's next. So listen, everybody loves the product, and you hear that from all of our startups. Here's your call to action. Don't have that crystal ball? Well, here is the next best thing. Download the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/twist. The guide is free to our listeners. Just visit netsuite.com/twist. That's netsuite.com/twist.
Yeah, for me, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot is as AI grows, I need to know where these conversations are, how to address them. So on an API basis, as an example, we have a Slack room for deliberating follow-on investments. We have a Slack room for deliberating primary investments, making that first investment. So the example would be, hey, you know, making that first investment, we have one Slack room for that. Then we have another room for, oh, Superhuman's doing their next round. Should we take our pro rata? Should we go super pro rata? Should we be selling in secondary, whatever? And I'm obsessed with having on Notion some information and then in Slack having one. And we're just, it's these conversations are so valuable. Also, we are recording some of our deliberations and discussions on Zoom, taking the transcript, putting the transcript and the original video onto Zoom. Why? I don't have the original deliberation for Reportive, Uber, Robinhood, Calm, anywhere. It occurred in a conference room with three people when the firm was just two or three people. Me, Ashley, and Jackie just like, and I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about investing in this company. And they asked me a couple of questions and then it's over. Now, you know, I in some ways I hate remote work because, you know, we miss the collisions and the in-person stuff. But having the digital trail of everything, oh man, I would love to have that conversation, some of those conversations to pull it up and say, what can we learn here on passing on Twitter and saying yes to Uber, you know, like just, and now we are doing that. And so that was one of the big discussions we had was, how do we get this, these conversations out of Superhuman and have them in some repository? So tell me right. How you think about that, APIs and I'm sure with enterprises, they're like, I need to know what our employees are talking about. If you're in finance, as an example, like we are, we have to tell our employees, any conversations you have, we have access to, we are storing forever. Don't ever say anything. You know, in Zoom, Slack, Superhuman, email, anywhere that is inappropriate. It's all, you know, in a finance company, not your content. It's our content for all time. We could be subpoenaed, all that kind of stuff. Whereas other organizations might be like, yeah, your DMs are not looked at, you know, whatever. We have to look at people's DMs in an organization. We have to look at this side conversation. If they were to say something or, God forbid, you know, share information they're not supposed to, finance organizations held to a much higher standard, obviously. So how do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, just my PSA, you should just assume that when you work for a company, your company communications belong to the company. Even if the company says, we're not going to look at your DMs, they may not want to, but they may be asked by the government to.
Yeah.
And they can't say, well, we don't want it. Like they then have to do it. Yeah. So just don't say anything stupid, folks. Like keep it real. We don't really play in that space. I mean, there are tools. Yeah. I think this is why Uber deletes everything after, was it 6 months or something like
that? Oh, is that right? Yeah. I think a lot of organizations are moving to don't keep stuff. Yeah. It's just a liability. Yeah. Your data is our liability. We don't want it here.
Exactly.
Smart move. Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't play in that space, but it is a good segue to the flip side, which is email truly is this treasure trove of information. So how do we get all of the stuff out of email? And this is the latest feature that we launched actually just last week. This is the thing that Dharmesh tweeted about this morning, which is Ask AI. If you think about what's in email, it's things like project statuses, customer communication, meeting summaries, deal execution, so much more. You name it, email has it. And for over 40 years, we've had to rely on, I hate to say this, search. You have to remember senders, guess keywords, scan subject lines. But with Superhuman AI and with Ask AI, you can just ask, where is the Q2 offsite or when is my flight? And I'd love to show you. Should we do another live demo?
Let's do it. Yeah. No, I mean, okay. AI on an inbox is just such an unlock, obviously. And I want to be able to do this across the whole organization. So back to like enterprise and CEOs and compliance, man, to be able, this will come up at some point with these 1,000+ installs you have, there's a compliance person who will want to do this, not just on their inbox, but for the whole organization. Has anybody talked to customer X, you know, blah, blah, blah. But let's put that aside and let's give an example here. Here we are, we're in the search box. And
And I know that there's an upcoming Superhuman offsite, but right now I don't remember the details of it. So I'm just going to type in here, where is the upcoming Superhuman offsite? Where is the upcoming Superhuman offsite? It's probably don't need to fix this, but let's just go ahead and do that. And you'll notice I now have this option to ask AI. If I just typed that in, or if I just did a search, I wouldn't get any search results. What we've done here is we've indexed and put in the vector database the last year's worth of email. We've also indexed all of your calendar, and it says, based on your calendar, the upcoming offsite is in San Diego. Actually turns out to be next week. I'm very much looking forward to this. We've also generated follow-up questions,
which
I might
want to ask. By the way, I'm available for offsites.
Dude, you should come. It's going to be amazing. We are going to have some customers there. We'd love to have investors there as well. Yep. But let's say I want to say, what do I want to do to prepare? I can just go ahead and click this. And what we're doing here is we're simulating a conversation you might have with an in-person or an online assistant who just has all the information for you. Based on your emails, this is what you should consider. I have a session that I need to prepare for. There are all these documents. And if I wanted to learn more, here are sources. This is where we're generating the information from. Now, one of my favorite things about Superhuman offsites are the hack days. As a fellow entrepreneur, you'll know that hack days are the best days.
Yeah.
That's when you see all the fun stuff. Will there be a hack day? Let's find out.
Now, this is so dope.
This honestly is life-changing. This is so hard to do with regular search. And of course, there will be a hack day, because of course, it wouldn't be an offsite without one. And I can open this and click through and just get more information.
Okay, now we just have to pause here. For people who are not watching, the elegance of this conversation is just so brilliant, because you ask a simple question, then it gave you what it perceives as your next three follow-on questions, but it also cites sources. In this case, the sources are those threads. So this is a problem we all face constantly, which is you have a question, you go to Slack, you ask it. Somebody searches their inbox, they cut and paste it back to you and say, hey, dummy, it's in your inbox. And then you say, well, I'm the CEO. I get 400 emails. Sorry, we'll bleep that out. But I am the CEO. I get 400 emails a day. Do you not understand, have any empathy for what my life is like? Or, you know, anybody who's a super router. And so here, it's just so great that somebody on your team had the presence of mind to say, well, let's just cite the sources. Because then I can jump into that thread and actually comment on it. But, you know, what happens is when you have so much friction to find that answer, to find those email threads, because your email box has 100,000 or a million emails in it, you just don't do it. And then you don't want to bother people. And here, it's like you're not bothering anybody. And this is just saves everybody on the organization. If you just do one of these a week, I think each one of these is like a 20-minute thing.
Totally.
You know, and you say 20 minutes, you know, in 10 weeks, that's 200. You know, every 3 weeks, it's an hour, basically. So, you know, you're talking about another 15 hours. And this is what I love about your product, and your team is so thoughtful, because the fact that there's somebody in the world obsessing about saving 20 minutes a week for a large base of users. Now, spending 500 developer hours to build something, or 5,000 in this, is probably 5,000 hours of developer or 10,000 hours of developer. Nobody's going to do that. But if you can do that and distribute that cost across, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of users, it's like, well, why wouldn't you do it? And it's just, this is so dope. Man, what a game changer.
It's really fun to build as well. And by the way, I haven't even shown you the most impressive version of this that I found yet. So this is really great. Like, this takes the load off my EA. It takes the load off the organization in general. Like, I work weird hours. I don't want to, you know, ping them at 2 a.m. Yo, what should I prepare for the offsite? Oh, here it is. Like, they've already put it in email. It's fantastic. Yeah. Let me show you this, though. Okay. So we launched this not too long ago. And like any good CEO, I wanted to do a cheerleading moment. What do I mean by that? I mean, I wanted to read through all the responses we got. We probably got like 500, 1,000 responses via a two-hour launch email on this. Pick the 10 best quotes, put them in an email, put them in a Google Slides, go to the company all hands that week, Friday wins, and present them, right? That's a lot of work. And I did it manually, just to see how long it would take, because that's what I've always done. And it took about 20 to 30 minutes to read through all those responses, to do the copy and paste, to like futz around with all of that. It's just a lot of time. And then, for shits and giggles, I was like, okay, let's see how fast it is with Superhuman AI, with Ask AI. So I'm going to do it over here on the sidebar. You can also click this little item down here. we have used the question mark shortcut. So I'm just going to go ahead and hit question mark. And I'm going to say, find me the top 10 most positive customer responses to the Ask AI launch. Make sure each one is at least 2 sentences. I want to get substantial responses here. Think about the craziness at this point. It's going through millions of emails I've received over the last year. It's synthesizing information. This is true needle in a haystack combination information synthesis stuff. All I now have to do is hit copy, come here, hit paste.
Get rid of the formatting's perfect.
It is done. Wow. It is done. Dude, this saves so half demented. An hour.
It's half an hour. I mean, come on. This could be multiple hours, and then you have to let somebody into your inbox to hunt and peck it. And, you know, it goes to the podcasting, anecdotes I was saying before. There's a lot of things that you just wouldn't do if you had to throw a human at it, right? You're just not going to do it. Or you'll never get to it. And then you ask your team, hey, can somebody do this? And they're like, everybody's too busy. We need to hire a new person who'll be the director of research of reviews. And you're like, I don't want to add headcount. And when we look, let's step back here. You and I as both investors, and you've done really well as an investor, as your side hustle. As investors, and as entrepreneurs, how you run a company has changed so dramatically in our, time in this industry. You 20 years in, me 30. Like, it is insane how different it is to start a company now than 30 years ago, than 20 years ago, than 10, and even 2. Maybe you could talk about just what we call on this program static team size, where people are keeping the same number of people, but then investing in tools and technology for those people, because it's just better to not increase team size and invest whatever low thousands of dollars into each employee with each product, with each amount of training, and then just keep the team size the same, but get, let's call it 30% out of each person extra per year. If you get but 31% out of each person per year, you're doubling your team size every 2 years. That's called the rule of 72. People can look it up in terms of compounding interest. If you were to get but 23% out of every employee, you would double your team size every 3 years. So maybe you could talk a little bit about running a company, how you think about team size. And also, as part of this, you were one of the very smart founders who made hay when the sun was shining and raised, I'm going to just say it, a war chest at peak ZERP during those eras. And then been very thoughtful about how you're deploying it and sitting on that war chest. So take either of those and dovetail them how you want.
Sure. Okay, let's take the second first. I have a relatively unusual method of managing burn. Let me see if I actually have it. I'm just going to do a quick Google search.
You're just
going to
ask a question to Superhuman AI and have it pull it up. I love it.
I could do that. I'm actually going to do this.
We don't want to go too live in your database. I don't want weird stuff to come up. Yeah, get crazy. Yeah. Okay, here we go.
So, anyone can look this up if you're listening via audio. Google how to run your startup in a recession. And it's in multiple places. This one is on AngelList. Now, there's all kinds of ways you can do this, right? You can do whatever it takes to get to profitability. There are some obvious problems with that, namely that you start to constrict things. Marketing is usually the first to go, then sales, and then you start cutting into engineering, product, and design. And if you're in a market worth fighting for, somebody else will overtake you. Or you can aim to get to a certain amount of runway. Some people aim for 24, which, by the way, why 24? Guys, that's not enough. You need more than 24 months of runway, whether it's a recession or not. But the point is, aiming at any fixed static number doesn't have a margin for error built into it. So we do something pretty unusual. I've never seen any other company do this. We pick the amount of runway that we want to maintain. In our case, we actually are very conservative, 48 months. And every single period of time, I've written here, we do it yearly. We actually do it quarterly. Every single quarter, we make sure that at that moment in time, we have 48 months of runway left.
Got it.
Which actually makes really fun conversations with investors or potential acquirers or even candidates who are interested in joining the company. You know, everyone says, how much runway do you have left? And I said, well, Bob, we always have 48 months runway. Like every single time we have this conversation,
yeah,
this time
we'll
next
talk
year,
next year it'll be 48.
So if you're planning to wait me out, that's not going to work, right? It's always 48 months of runway.
Yeah. If you're looking to lowball with 4 weeks, not going to happen. You got to pay. Exactly. Got to pay to play. Love
so,
it.
And in this article, I go through the details of how you can do this. And I think this is just a really powerful technique that more founders should consider. Okay. So as we think about team size, I totally hear you. And I actually more sort of, what's the word? Not experimentally, but sort of, I came across this idea that you just mentioned more in practice. We got up to about 120 people at sort of peak ZERP days, so to say. And, you know, unfortunately, like many of the companies, we had to do a layoff. We got a little bit ahead of our skis. What I am happy about, if happy is not the right word, what I feel at the very least not terrible about is back when we did it, we were one of the very first companies to do this. And, you know, I think if the economy is pretty frothy right now, I don't think we're in any imminent danger. But if we were to head into another recession, my advice to founders would be, if you are considering the layoff, do it sooner than later, because you want to release your people into a job market that is still hot, where they can still easily get that next role. And the sooner you do it, the more money you'll save, the more severance you can afford to pay. Like, it's just better off for everybody. So we did this relatively early in the cycle. It was well before most of our contemporaries. And that brought us down from around 120 people down to around 70 or 80 people or so. We've recently climbed back up to the 100 to 110 mark. And to your point, we've actually stayed there for, I think, the last year and a half, maybe even 2 years. It is a really, really nice size of company to run. There's just something magical about that size where communication doesn't break down. You don't have too many silos. You do have some management in the middle of the organization, but it's not so much that things get lost or people start to build kingdoms or fiefdoms. And, you know,
I was about to say the tribalism can't happen because you can bring the leaders to the offsite and you can have enough of the people at the offsite. I don't know if you're bringing everybody, but
we're bringing everybody.
Well, incredible. And, you know, it's enough that you as the CEO and the founder essentially know everybody and you can maintain, I believe, as a founder, you kind of get to 20, 30 core people in your team that you can maintain a very deep relationship with, know their families, know where they're at, talk to them every month. And are you seeing gains in productivity each year because of AI internally? So let's put aside Superhuman's AI efforts, but just broadly, you're using a lot of different tools. I'm sure you've got tools in sales. I'm sure you've got tools, whether you use Notion or Coda, which are very AI powered now. You got Slack getting AI. You got developers using Copilots. So talk to me about how you're thinking when you're running the organization, investing in your people to make them more efficient, and what kind of gains do you see from AI, you know, and personal development?
Yeah. I mean, in short, we are. I think the most important thing that a founder or a CEO has to do is make it clear to the organization that that's what they expect. Hey, folks, I expect you to get more productive every single year with AI. And then the thing that I'm going to do is release the budget to make that happen. And also the expectation that not every piece of software is going to work. Like we've, I don't know, trialed probably 10, 15 different bits of AI software. Maybe a third of them have really stuck and have had a high hit rate. Personally, my favorite outside of Superhuman and outside of ChatGPT is Loom AI. A lot of what I do as a product and design-oriented founder is I sweat the tiny little details and I'm constantly recording Looms. I'm like, hey, you know, when I click this thing or I do this thing, this shifts by a pixel, this isn't quite right. And here, let me open the console in Chrome. Let me show you what's going on. Let's fix the CSS, whatever it is.
You're basically sportscasting with Loom and,
exactly.
You know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, a video's worth 1 billion pictures. Because when you're watching the product demo and saying like, hey, you know, this, and this, boom. And what I've gotten now is smart founders they know I love a good Loom and they will make a custom Loom. So just think about that as like an unlock. You got some seed stage company where you're trying to get into our accelerator or Y Combinator and you just send a little Loom to us. 2 minutes. Hey, J-Cal, wanted to show you my product. I know you invested in Superhuman. We're Superhuman for blah, blah, blah. Here's how it works. We got this. We got this. We haven't built this. And I'm hearing from the founder in their own voice what essentially would be an elevator pitch at a party where it's too noisy. And now I got visuals. And people were like, I'm too busy to send that. You're too busy not to send it.
Right.
And then for folks that don't know,
where Loom AI comes in, and hopefully your founders are doing this when they pitch you, is it will automatically title the video. It'll automatically create a transcript. Mm. And as I'm thinking about my Loom activity, I probably record 30, 40 a day. Imagine if the recipients had to actually watch the video in detail every single time, even at 1.2 or 1.5x. That's a lot of time. What they can now do, though, is they can triage, they can read the title, they can read the transcript.
No, wait, is Loom AI different than just the standard Loom by Atlassian? Is this two different companies or the same one?
It is the same company. I'm just going to throw it up on the screen for our viewers. I'm not going to play this because it's me giving feedback on the bug. But I did not create this title. I did not write this summary. I did not make
the chapters. Oh my God, so genius. Right. What a great unlock from our friends at Loom, Atlassian. They're not sponsors of the show, but we both give it 5 stars. Great product.
Totally.
And what a great punch up here.
This
right-hand side, 3 suggested tasks for viewers.
Read through the transcripts if you're in an environment where you can't listen to audio. Sometimes reading is faster. I mean, this is just such a phenomenally well-executed AI tool.
It's just such an incredible moment in time. I was talking to one of the top 20 most legendary founders, billionaires on the planet. We had dinner the other night and we were just hashing things out and talking. And he said, have you ever seen anything like this? We've both been in the industry the same amount of time. I said, no. And it's super motivating to me. He says, I can't wait to get to work every day. And, I'm taking meetings at 8 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night, because somebody's got something so amazing. I can't wait to see it. It's just like everything we've worked on in the last 20, 30, 40 years of computing has led to this moment where AI takes what happened in desktop software, cloud computing, storage, bandwidth, machine learning, big data, mobile, video. And then it's like, yeah, you know what? Boom. Everything is like these ingredients now to this super dish, which is human beings are getting, I think the human beings who are embracing this are getting 10, 20% better per month. You know, and I have 21 people in the investment firm now. It's a lot of people for, a $50 million fund. We have very profitable events business and podcast business that you're listening to right now, everybody. So I kind of spend that on, increasing this. But man, the top third of my team that embraces this, they are like, whoop, the difference between the top third and the bottom third of people who like hard embrace AI, and people who are not embracing it. And then there's everybody in between who are kind of dabbling. If you just break those three cohorts up, I think the difference between group one and two, hard embrace and dabbling in terms of value to a company, is like 10x. And then you go to people who are not embracing it versus dabblers and people who are embracing it. The people who are embracing it, I think, are becoming 100 times more valuable to an organization. If you were to look at this, what are you seeing in this regard?
That's absolutely what I see, what I hear as well. Speaking of Ed Sim, we mentioned him earlier in the episode. He noted, he's an investor. He noted that when he talks to founders who are in their early 20s, maybe they've just come out of college, the way that they code and the way that they build is entirely different to people who've been coding for 5, 10 years plus. And like, it's just a different expectation, a different workflow. Not only is it faster, it's also faster to iterate. And yeah, I mean, is it 100x? I don't know, but certainly in the region of 5 to 10x for certain things. An area that I use AI a lot, apart from just Loom AI, is for writing copy. And I mean, you're a great marketer as well, but sometimes we just can't think of the headline. And what I do, and this is the simplest use case, but it's so powerful, is I just go to ChatGPT and go, yo, can you give me 10 more versions of this headline, please? Make it pithier, make it funnier, find a joke, And that's all I need to actually make it pop.
Well, what happens when you do it, and we have a company, Saga, that's making a tool for kind of like Final Draft for writing screenplays, and it also makes storyboards. which I push them hard on, like, if you're a screenplay writer and it automatically starts making storyboards for you while you're typing, holy cow. Or if you're a storyboard artist and it makes copy based on what you drew, like, that's kind of wild. Wow. Because those moments happen when the people get together and they share their work. But it requires, I'm a writer, I need a storyboard artist, or I'm a storyboard artist, I need a writer. Like, the brainstorming process, writing jokes, writing copy, making images, creating characters, creating business plans, it's like having somebody just bounce ideas off of available to you 24/7. And I would say when I do this same thing, like I do it when I'm branding companies or products, I'll be like, here's what I want in a brand. What do you think? You know, and it kind of starts giving me feedback, whatever. It's sparking in my brain connections that I would not have thought of, because if the AI gives me 90% garbage and 10% good, it might spark, the garbage might spark, like, that's garbage, this would be better. Mm-hmm. Or that's brilliant, how do I punch it up? And so I am not precious about this anymore, where I'm like, oh, artists, you know, people writing lyrics. And I think people in Hollywood who are like trying to, I don't know if you saw when they had their strike, were like trying to ban AI in the writer's room. I'm like, these people are going to the bathroom and using ChatGPT. If you ban it in the thing, they're going to come back after pretending they're taking a leak with new ideas that they brainstorm with ChatGPT. Let's not be precious. I mean, people sit there who are writers with a thesaurus, or like they'll go to a website filled with idioms and catchphrases, and they'll do their searches there for ideas.
Yeah.
It's just so powerful for copywriting. I think right now, I'm feeling like when we get the agent technology going, and you know, the guide on the side who you proactively ask for stuff becomes like, here's what you should focus on, you know, that's going to be the big unlock. And I know that you're probably thinking that as well. If I'm sitting here in my email box, I really want a sidebar, you know, with Scarlett Johansson or Gwyneth Paltrow, or, you know, whoever it is, Tom Petty, whatever person I like most, you know, in celebrity world, saying, hey man, have you thought about giving Raul a call and checking in on your investment? And it's like in a Bob Dylan voice. Like, it should be, and I asked you for this feature, like, tell me who, like, 10 years ago I was talking to a whole bunch, but that I'm out of touch with, and just go find out what the hell they're doing in the world, and maybe I should catch up with them. So have you thought about your email box becoming, you know, your chief of staff and feeding you ideas of what to do next? I don't want to spoil the roadmap, but I get the sense that you're thinking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. That Ask AI feature I demonstrated, we consider as a proto agent. And we have this framework internally that folks may find useful, the evolution of AI features, three phases. Phase one was on demand. And these are features that work only when you ask them to work. All of the, you know, write with AI features were like that. They're very cheap to build. They're very cheap to maintain. Generally speaking, they're out of the way because they're not always there. And that's what we all started with. And Superhuman made a big splash for our write with AI feature when that came out early last year. That then gave us the confidence to move on to phase two, which is always on AI. And you noted this in our demo with auto summarize, which is the one liner and the bullet points at the top of the email, a lot harder to build. Because for that kind of a feature, for every single email you receive, and boy, do our users receive a lot of emails, we're re-summarizing the entire thread. And we've done that for probably north of 10 billion emails to date. That then gave us the confidence to build Ask AI, which, like I said, is sort of a proto-agent. It can do some agent-like things today. For example, it's capable of multi-step conversations. We had a look at that. It's capable of resolving ambiguity. If I'm like, hey, you know, what did Jason last email me about? It would probably say, do you mean Jason Calacanis or Jason XYZ? And once we've resolved the ambiguity, it's then going to give me the answer. But it's not too long before we can imagine an AI agent that is sitting in your inbox, drafting emails on your behalf, scheduling meetings on your behalf, maybe even sending fully written emails one day on your behalf. That will
Are
happen.
The auto replies that you're doing now, because I just used it for the first time, I always look at them, but I consider my voice very unique, and I want it in my voice. I'm not kind of the guy who wants to one click, you know, use one of those things. Is it studying my voice yet to give me ones that are different than yours? You might be a little formal English and, you know, blimey or whatever, and I might be Brooklyn and be like, what the f-? This is, you know, inappropriate expletive here. Is it actually using my replies to craft my auto reply one clicks yet?
It is, but not in the way yet that I'd like it to. So we do study the emails that you've sent, and we sort of condense that into a voice signature, if you will. We apply that to the emails that we write, but I'm not yet satisfied. And there's some pretty obvious improvements that we will be making over the course of the next, I think, 6 months or so. I'm pretty hopeful that will get a lot more like you. Because that is the feedback that we hear the most, which is, hey, this feature is amazing. And I use it on my personal email where the stakes are fairly low, right? I'm, you know, I'm interacting with my dentist or this contractor or whatever it is, whatever. Yeah, boom, who cares? But with a work colleague, you do want it to sound like you. With a founder, you want to sound like you. So that will happen over the course of the next 6 months.
Yeah, I LinkedIn is your alma mater, is like doing these at the bottom. Yeah. And I noticed, you know, we do a little thing with our Athena support staff. Go to athenawow.com, get a free month off or something like that. I have my own domain to track all my referrals as an investor. And we just we gave them a list of all of our companies, all of our founders. And this is probably of the 400, maybe 250 are still active in the last 12 years. And they look at yours and they look at Superhumans, corporate stuff, and they will give us every day 20 updates that they think are interesting. We open them up, and then I just ask people on the teams, 21 of us, engage in 4 a day, but meaningfully engage, because people were using the LinkedIn thing like, impressive, !! or awesome. Yeah. And I'm just like, less is more. Write something more thoughtful. There should be like a slider of like more verbose, and I love Grammarly. Do you use Grammarly at all?
I'm in and out of Grammarly just to see what they're up to, yeah.
I mean, they remind me of you in terms of their product velocity and thoughtfulness. And as a writer, I think they're doing just a great job. And they have a really cool tool. I force everybody in the team to use it because I'm like, they have like business, clarity, concise, verbose, you know, it really gets granular there. So built in iOS, Android, whatever, you know, grammar correction will get you, you know, to phase one. But to get to phase two or three, where you're really being thoughtful about, is this a concise conversation, verbose one? You know, that's what I need in these auto replies. Because right now I'm looking at one on my mobile and it's like, great potential. Any updates? Impressive work. And I would like a full sentence, right? So I could just set that full sentence, shorten, or maybe it just shows me 3 levels. Concise, verbose, spicy, whatever, you know, but such great potential. Listen, Raul, you're amazing. Thank you for letting me invest in your company. I'm so glad that when all the secondary people came and tried to buy me out, I said no, because I think you're going to build a legendary company. You already have, but I think it's a legendary company that will be here 10, 20 years from now, because you're not like, you're really thinking about these problems in a deep way. And I encourage all founders to watch this episode with your teams so that you can catch up to some of the best practices that we see out there. If you want to make your organization literally, you know, 2, 3, 4 times more efficient, get them all on Superhuman. It's the easiest, this is the easiest spend you can do. Superhuman.com, superhuman.com, superhuman.com. You got to have like your top 3 or 4 people on it, learn it, do the training, and then decide for yourself if you want to bring the other 10 people. But, you know, that's your assignment, everybody. Over the next 48 hours, if you're listening to my voice, you got to take it seriously and invest in tools like Superhuman. Anything else I can plug for you? You're hiring, you got a position, you got some sticky position that's hard to fill that you need?
Nothing that's particularly blocker? Sticky. We just opened up a product manager role. I know a lot of product folks listen to or watch the pod.
Yeah,
if that's interesting, this is going to focus on core products. Products for the enterprise, calendar. We just launched a share availability feature, which people really love.
Great.
It is a lot of people's dreams to work on productivity tools because usually they're not very good businesses. Usually it's like, it's my, you know, my, every engineer has built an email client. But we've actually cracked the nuts here. We've found the formula. And so if that's the kind of thing that you want to work on, then come work with us.
Hey, listen, if you're an elite product manager, you know, Superhuman is one of the great places you could be because you'll be amongst other elite product designers and a great product leader in a product-led organization. And we will see you all next time on This Week in Startups. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.